Okay, let's roll with an episode of The Teller. I'm here. It's late at night. Late at night is good for telling stories, actually, because late at night is a time for telling stories. I've got little Harry here with me. Do you want to say hello, Harry, or not?
Well, I'm sad.
He's a bit sad. He's a bit sad because he was playing a game called Fortnite.
And came... I came second because the other person shot through the wall.
And he came in second because the other person shot through the wall and probably cheated.
He was a hacker.
And was a hacker. So that's what happened there. And he shouldn't really be up at this time of night. I'm not going to say what time of night it is because he shouldn't be up at this time of night. But well, he's listening to me doing a podcast now. It's going to be a little bit different, this podcast, actually, because I did say in the last one that I was going to do some horror bits and pieces. I might not do a horror story particularly, but I am going to do a little bit more of a ghost story. And I'm not doing a poem today to finish with. I'm going to do a very short sort of story monologue for a change and tag it at the end of the podcast. But before I start the podcast, actually, I'm going to give a short true story. When does a story become a story and when does it become something that's factual? It's a memory. I went to Russia in the year 2000 and I was staying with a Russian family. And it was February. It was phenomenally cold. And even though it was really, really, really cold, this Russian family that I was staying with took me out to see an old monastery that had reopened. And the thing about the monastery was, it was very near a lake. And the lake was partly frozen over, and these Russians went down to collect some holy water and stuff from it. In front of the lake, there was a little wooden building, more like a hut. And inside the hut, they had sort of a place for adult baptism, and there was a Russian monk inside there. But I elected rather to not go down to the lake. Instead of doing that, I sat on a like a bench thing near the woods, and I watched the path down to the lake where those Russians were there that I knew that were collecting this holy water from the lake. And as I was sitting there, a Russian monk walked past me. Nothing really unusual in that, because there were monks around. It was a monastery, for goodness sake. But as the monk walked past me, he, I can't really describe it better than drifted past me, really. I never saw his face, I just saw the back of him. And as he went down towards the lake, he veered off towards the building. Now, there was nothing untoward in that either, and there really were very few people around. But bizarrely, as I watched him, I could only describe it as him seeming to go slightly fuzzy to the eye. And as he approached the wooden building, he just seemed to kind of melt into it. And he went through the back part of the building where there was no discernible door. I was rather confused by this. I got up and I went down there, opened the door, which was around the other side. And there was one Russian monk in there who spoke a very limited amount of English. But when he sort of understood what I'd seen, he brought me round. And the Russians that I was staying with came back, and one of them could speak enough English to be able to translate between the two of us. And he basically said, yes, this is something, you know, this monk character he's seen quite frequently. And there was an old door at the back of the building, maybe 30, 40 years ago, that is now gone, even longer ago, perhaps. You could still see where the step was, and the building had changed as well from that sort of period of time. And he said, yes, you know, he's seen quite frequently just making his way down here. I was still of the belief that whatever it was I saw, you would probably call it a ghost. Now, whether I did or didn't see a ghost, who knows? Maybe I did, but possibly I didn't. I know I saw something, and I know that my belief is that it was a ghost. But obviously I can't prove it. Am I lying? No, I'm not. Do I have any motive for lying? No, I'm not. And it's not a story either. It's my truth. And you see, this is where story and truth tend to overlap. And writing stories involving ghosts are actually very difficult. You might have heard my second podcast, which was The Ghosts of London. I think it was called, was it The Ghost of London? I don't remember now. There was only one ghost anyway, though they didn't need a plural on it. But when I started writing that, one of the things that I very quickly realised was that ghosts themselves are really very difficult to write, because if you put them within a horror context, they can't really do that much. What do? Walk through a wall? Walk through a wall, or possibly sort of go woo or something like that. They're not in themselves scary. Not in themselves. There has to be something else about them that makes them scary. And this kind of dragged me towards other ghost stories, such as The Woman in Black. Now, she's pretty scary, to be honest. I watched Daniel Radcliffe's version of that. That is quite a scary story, because she has the capacity to kill children. And drag them to their doom and things like that. And that's scary. And of course, poltergeists, they can be scary as well. And generally, contacting things that are dead and bringing them back is one of the sort of staples of horror writing generally. Which brings me rather neatly towards today's story. We're never very far from the dead. They've left impressions around them, like footprints in the sand. And some places, they're closer to us than perhaps we'd like to think. Old buildings carry the weight of the ages and the past with them. In the Islamic world, of course, it's forests and trees where jinns can hide and all manner of things in the dark. And this, of course, is like the old Elizabethan times and thoughts, where we beware the fairy men, the little people of the night who would come and steal baby boys, curdle your milk, or set things astray. And for this tale today, well, actually, what we're going to get today is a series of short little stories, so a very different episode. I've trawled around the internet and I've got some great little short stories posted up on sites such as Creepypasta and things like that. Pulled off one or two of my own favourites. I'm going to finish on a short piece of mine. Also going to pop in a tale that a true story, I think, that I was once told by one of my students. And I'm going to pop in now a couple of short little ghost stories that I have found for your listening pleasure. The first one is called Something Under the Bed. It's very short. Anyway,
I have a little lad, and we've got this dad, and he's popping his son to bed. So I begin tucking him up into the bed. And my little lad says to me, "Daddy, Daddy, please check for monsters under the bed." Now I look underneath, just, you know, to amuse him. But I see him, another him, let's say the real him, under the bed. And he stares back at me and he quivers and he whispers, "Daddy, Daddy, there's somebody in my bed." Ah, do you like that one? See? Stories don't have to be long, do they, to get a bit of, get a little bit of tension there. Now, I like this one. This next one, another short story, really. It's a friendly ghost, seemingly friendly, just playing with the kids. But let's see where we take it to. Goes as follows. Where did I find this one? I think this was Creepypasta, actually. Yeah, I think it was. Okay, here we go. When my sister and I were kids, our family lived, for a while, in a very charming old farmhouse. Now, we loved exploring those dusty corners, climbing the apple tree in the backyard. But our very favourite number one thing was the family ghost. We called this ghost Mother, because she seemed so kind and nurturing. Some mornings, Betsy and I would wake up, and on each of our nightstands, we'd find a cup that just hadn't been there the night before. Mother had left them there, worried that we'd get thirsty during the night. She just, you know, wanted to take care of us. Now, among the homes or original furnishings was an antique wooden chair, which we kept against the back wall of the living room. Whenever we were preoccupied watching TV or perhaps playing a game, Mother would inch that chair forward, across the room, towards us. Sometimes she'd manage to move it all the way to the centre of the room. Now, we always felt sad putting it back against the wall, and Mother just basically wanted to be near us. Years later, though, long after we'd moved out, I found an old newspaper article about the farmhouse's original occupant, who was a widow. She'd murdered her two children by giving each of them a cup of poisoned milk before bed. Then she hung herself. The article included a photo of the farmhouse's living room with a woman's body hanging from a beam, and beneath her, knocked over, was that old wooden chair, placed exactly in the centre of the room. I wonder if you're sitting in the garden listening to this under an old tree or looking at an old house with a chair in the middle of the room. Is it just me or did it just get a little bit colder? I'll move to a possibly true one now. I say possibly true because it's interesting because this came from the classroom. And I'm sitting with my students in the classroom, and we're talking about writing descriptively ghost stories and things like that. And one of the girls, 16-year-old girl, and she goes, "Mr. Chambers," she says, my house is haunted." I said, "Well, really? Tell me about it then." And another girl sitting next to her goes, yeah, honestly, sir," she says, "it is definitely haunted. Tell him. And the class is kind of quiet, and one or two of the kids are nodding, you know. And I mean, let's face it, this is 16-year-olds, you know. They've got their credibility to think of here. And so she starts telling me this story, and she says, "Well, we live in an old house, an old farmhouse in the Lake District. And in this old farmhouse," she says, "there's a room upstairs that we use as a storage room. It should be a bedroom, but frankly, nobody can actually sleep in it. And the reason that nobody can sleep in it is because we just can't get it warm, no matter how much we turn the temperature up." And she says also, she said, "there's The cat won't go in because every time we try to put the cat in, it just goes like that. It lifts up its fur and it doesn't like it. And she says also, she said, whenever my uncle comes with his dog, the dog won't go in either. It just barks at the room, just randomly barks at it. But she said, the thing that I want to tell you about, she said, is the only time that I, you know, really think that I can prove that there's a ghost in the house. And she says, my baby brother used to sleep downstairs with my mum when she would be in the kitchen and just pottering around the house and that, in the farmhouse. And she says, my dad and I had gone out for some bits and pieces of the supermarket and we'd pull the car in. And she says, my mum was like sitting near the front part of the house. And she said, my baby brother was in the back, near the back garden, in the back kitchen, sleeping. But she said, when we pulled the car up and we got out, she says, my dad and I could hear wind chimes coming from the back garden. But she goes, we like don't have any wind chimes. There's no wind chimes there. And she says, my dad puts the shopping down and he walks quite quickly round to where the baby is at the back. And she says, when we get to the back kitchen, you can feel the room is like really quite cold. Quite cold. And she said, not only that, she said, but my little brother's sleeping there. And she said, the sound of those wind chimes are really quite strong. And she said, my dad comes in the room, and he goes, get out of this room now, and go back upstairs. Otherwise, he said, I'm going to have you cast out of my house. And she says, the wind chimes like just stopped, okay? And she says, not only did the wind chimes stop, but within about 5 or 6 minutes, the temperature in the room starts rising, and whatever it is had gone out of the room. Wow. Think about that one. It reminds me of these sort of like great lines from ghost stories. Things like, Mummy, the man at the top of the stairs says you should leave. Could do something with that, couldn't you, as a story? That would be a great story. I do write original stuff as well, you know, and I might play around with that line. Anyway, one last short one. I told you it's a very unusual kind of a day today, isn't it? This is not my normal way of doing stories. I just thought I'd dip in and do something completely different, you know? Let's sort of kind of hit you with a couple of just short stories. This is a fiction one. It's not a true tale. It's not claiming to be true. But it's called The Ghost of Tome. It's another one that I found on the internet. I found this one from a website called Haunted Rooms, so I'll give it a plug. It's all public domain stuff, so I don't know who the writers are. But, you know, well done these writers, because they're good stuff. A man thinks in this one that he's lost his phone. Somebody's playing a trick on him. And it does definitely turn out that somebody is playing with him. Let's have a look at it. It's another very short one, but kind of creepy. Last night, a friend rushed me out of the house to catch the opening act at the local bar's music night. Now, after a few drinks, I realised that my phone wasn't in my pocket. I checked the table we were sitting at the bar, and the bathrooms, and there was still no lock, so I used my friend's phone to call mine. After two rings, somebody answered and gave out a low, raspy giggle and then hung up. They did not answer again. I eventually gave it up as a lost cause and headed home. And what did I find? I found my phone lying on my nightstand. Exactly where I'd left it. Weird, eh? I wonder which one of those little tales you like the best. I wonder which one. I'm going to sort of finish just with a little bit of chat and a story that another true story, actually, this one. This concerns myself, and it's going back a couple of years now, and my partner loves to take photographs. She takes photographs all the time, because that's her thing. And a few years ago now, we were at Hampton Court Palace in London. reputedly a very haunted place. Particularly the so-called Haunted Gallery, where Henry VIII's fifth wife, the very young Catherine Howard, only 16, wasn't she, bless her, runs down the corridor trying to find Henry to beg for her life. She didn't succeed, of course, poor girl. She got arrested, dragged away down the corridor and beheaded. And they say that she haunts that place. Now, we were downstairs in the kitchens at Hampton Court, and in one little part of the kitchens, every time that my partner tried to take a photograph, the photograph just turned up blank. And she would move slightly further up, and it was working fine. And not only that, the very little patch in the kitchens downstairs where she was trying to take the photograph was very, very cold. It gave you a slight shiver when you were standing there. So why was her camera malfunctioning every time that she stood in this particular part of the old kitchen? Creepy. Unusual. This is the one totally original bit of fiction for me coming up. Again, it's just a short little piece. I'm rather proud of it. I think I was playing with the idea of Catherine Howard. I feel very sorry for Catherine Howard. She's not a very famous one of Henry VIII's wives. Very much a victim. Poor girl, abused when she was a child. She's still a child at 16, forced to marry this tyrannical, obese man. If she did have an affair, and she probably did, well, I could hardly blame her, frankly. And sent to the execution block after barely a year or so of being married to him. I wanted to try to conjure a picture of her there in the Tower of London, hours before the execution. And I wanted to put my reader standing there with her, thinking as she did. And I thought, what would she do? Apparently, she spent the night, bless her, this is true, practicing putting her head on the execution block so she would get it right. While outside, the scaffold had been built and her would-be abusers or lovers had been executed the day before. I present her standing there alone for a few moments. She's taken her clothes off and she's standing there looking at herself one last time. See what you think. Here we go. I had everything. But now I have fallen. The pearls still hang around my neck. The trappings of wealth and royalty that have now been stripped away from me. Naked, I stand alone, bare, adrift from anyone who may have loved me. This morning I watched as far, far below they erected the scaffold, watched as they executed both my lover and my abuser. Their heads now sit upon the pikes placed outside my window, with empty eyes staring mask-like on my nude self where once their hands were placed. 16. Married at 15. Ah, the most beautiful girl in court, made to dance around the king to catch his eye. I was the pawn in my family's power game. And then the vultures began to circle. The man from my past became my blackmailer. Whispers and more whispers, and the noose began to tighten. I'm 16, my life has just begun, yet the apple is already decaying. The crow sits upon my lover's hyatt, and I know it will soon have mine. I touch myself and feel my body one last time, a body that he loved but will now destroy.
Where there was happiness, there is now only a cloud. Ah, where there was life, only death now walks. Will it be quick? Shall I cry as I walk in front of the crowd? Will I hear the call of horror as I step to the block? Oh my God, what have I done to deserve this? I'm a child once more, standing there, exposed before my God. The door opens and Margaret walks into the room as the early morning sunlight begins to filter in even. Surely it can't be my time already, the dawn of my end. Margaret gasps at my nudity and desperately tries to cover me with a gown, and she cries, huge tears falling down her face as she laments what has befallen me. I want to cry. I want the mother I never had. I want to be held and loved. But my only lover is to be the steel on the headsman's axe. Margaret tells me that I must dress. She begins to do my hair and fuss over my buttons, but I swear that I'd rather walk out as I was an hour ago and leave this world as I came into it. I pass Margaret my pearls, the last gift that is mine to give. It is the end. And it is the end. The end of this, I think, quite different edition of The Teller. Next time I'll go back to doing my normal one story, but this time I hope you've enjoyed a slightly different format. I'll finish by mentioning, of course, as I often do, you know, I do these podcasts for free. I hope you enjoy them. I've never charged for them. I'm not one of these that endlessly is trying to put up adverts or look to try to get people to, you know, I don't know, pay up all the time to listen to me. But, you know, I don't do any funding. I'd love some new microphones. I'd like a little bit better equipment and this sort of thing. Actually, I mean, come on, if you're enjoying my podcast, you know, buy me a cup of tea and a sandwich or something even. Pop over something on PayPal. Even if it's just a couple of pounds, I really appreciate it. It lets me know that you're enjoying things. My PayPal account is lowercase letters emchambers1966@gmail.com. That's emchambers1966@gmail.com. Yeah, buy me a cup of tea and a sandwich or something. And it'll be nice to be appreciated. And it'll be nice to know that you've enjoyed things. That's also my email address if you ever want to just drop an email and say hi and let me know what you think of the stories. That'd be nice as well. And I'll go now, but I'll just mention as well, actually, if you want a little bit of reading material, perhaps. There are some great haunted stories out there, some really, really good tales. I mean, the Stephen King's there may be a little bit obvious. Stephen King, what a great writer, something like The Shining, for example. But a little bit more off-beam, I could, if you want to read something that will absolutely scare you, Richard Matheson, his book Hell House. One for the grown-ups, this, by the way, not for children. Hell House by Richard Matheson. Whoa, that is a scary tale. Henry James, The Turn of the Screw. Great, great piece of scary writing. Totally recommend it. Books of Blood, Clive Barker. There's another one. Bleak, unsettling short stories. It'll get you, that one. And a piece of brilliance, a book called The Heart-Shaped Box by Joe Hill. There's three recommendations. And now, if you, a couple of four, was there? Even if you pick up them, oh, You will not regret it, believe me. Those are seriously scary tales. Great writing, very scary. Really will get you. And see you in a month or so's time. And don't forget, emchambers1966@gmail.com. Put something over, say thanks, and I'll really appreciate it. That's on PayPal. Cheers, wherever you are in the world. May your gods go with you. God bless.